Welcome back to the Minium Podcast. This is episode 4. Today I'm joined by Kyle Edelbrock of Twinkietown.
Hello.
Hi, Kyle. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. So we have a couple things that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. So if you are on Twitter, or just following the Twins blogosphere very well, you would know that this week we signed Martin Perez, a left-handed pitcher, formerly of the Texas Rangers, and that caused some sort of meltdown for the vast majority of people who are on Twitter and follow the Twins. Not just about signing Martin Perez himself, but about what it means regarding roster construction and payroll expenditure and how people assume that the Twins should be operating and how much they should be spending.
As you know, the Twins Twitter has never overreacted about anything ever. So
this, no.
No. Not once.
Yeah, it's one of those things where Twitter is always overreactive. Sports Twitter is more overreactive than normal Twitter. And Twins Twitter, Minnesota sports Twitter in general, is even worse than that. So it's basically the upper echelon of people overreacting without ever actually analyzing something. So it's good fun to take part in.
I think politics Twitter might have a leg up.
Yeah, it's close.
Just, I mean,
the one thing about sports Twitter is that the stakes are a lot lower. So going crazy on sports Twitter about something that isn't really important, I mean, that just makes it worse in my opinion. Whereas politics, I mean, that stuff actually matters for people.
Right. So right.
Yeah.
It will actually affect things for people, for like millions of people, but sports Twitter is just, it's sport, it's a game, it doesn't really I don't know if you read my piece from yesterday about the Twins' new home alternate uniforms.
Yes, yeah, and that was another thing that people just got all up in a bunch about, that probably, I mean, not too big of a deal in the long run.
But where I'm going with this is, when I put up the article, it was shared to our Facebook page. And as you know, there's a lot of people on the Twinkietown Facebook that aren't actually part of the community. They're just like reading the articles and not commenting or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So they use the Facebook comments as their outlet to communicate with Twinkietown articles. Mm-hmm. And there were a few comments, not necessarily about my writing, but the Twins shouldn't be focused on making new uniforms. They should sign Bryce Harper or something like that.
Yeah, the general managers and the people who actually do the contract signing, they're busy, you know, doing the Photoshop editing of what they want their jerseys to look like. So that's why we're not signing Bryce Harper.
I wasn't going to respond to any of the comments because I don't like when people are like, don't like things that I write. I don't usually try to engage with them.
Sure. Yeah.
But I was almost gonna write like, how much do you think it costs to make a jersey? Like,
well, they have guys that do just that.
Yeah. It's not the same department, and so it's not even remotely related.
Exactly. But, yeah.
Yeah, just, I should have known that the minute anything that I wrote was shared to Facebook that there would be some really weird comments.
Mm-hmm. There always are. Yeah, the Facebook, I think, might be even worse than Twitter for Twinkie Town. So.
The thing about... No, there was one even. I'm not going to name names because they might actually be listening to this, but there was one actually like, if they can spend $25 million a year on Joe Mauer, then they can definitely sign Bryce Harper.
Yeah. Well, and we'll get into a few reasons why something like that may or may not be true. So I've been following this pretty closely. Not the Twitter, you know, ramblings necessarily, but the way the team is created. And if you've been reading Twinkie Town for the last few years, you probably saw me a lot in 2017, a little bit less in 2018, but I'm the prospect guy. So I follow the draft pretty closely. I follow our minor leagues pretty closely.
Yeah.
So I focus, I mean, I watch games when I can, I get to games when I can, and I care about what the big team does, the big league team does. But I spend most of my time focusing on our minor leagues and our prospects and how they're doing and what that means for the team in general. So I focus more on how a roster is created than I do necessarily about the outcome itself, because there's such a level of variance that happens every year. So I've been following this for quite a while. So I've been sort of holding back and waiting for a good moment to talk about this whole payroll thing, not just as it relates to the amount of money we're spending year in and year out, but what it means for a team moving forward, especially with a brand new front office, a relatively brand new front office now.
Yes. Yeah, so this is your chance to
exactly
talk about it.
And before I even got the chance, Brandon Warren had a great piece over at Zone Coverage. I think he put it up on like late Thursday night or early Friday morning. And it's basically a really good explanation of a few of the different reasons why the Twins wouldn't be spending right now.
I did read that, and I do really enjoy Brandon Warren's writing. And it was very well written, and I thought he made some great points.
Yeah, he's definitely more on the logical side of the blogosphere, I suppose. I mean, technically he's a beat writer, so he's not even really blogging. I guess I don't know the semantics of that, but I mean, he's a great writer, and he has some really good points. So I was just sort of going to go through those because he articulates them a bit better than I do.
Sure.
And I want to go through with them in reverse order, or at least sort of what I've come up with. And the first reason, and one of the reasons why the Martin Perez extravaganza has really been, you know, overblown, is that they could still sign people. And one of the things that Brandon covers is that the and he might have covered this on Twitter more, is that Derek Falvey has more or less said that the Twins are done making signings. And they said that last year. And after they said that last year, they signed Lance Lynn and they signed Logan Morrison. So, I mean, Bryce Harper and Manny Machado are still on the market. Dallas Kuchel is still on the market. I think Marwin Gonzalez is still on the market. There's a lot of big name free agents who haven't signed yet. We're a few weeks from spring training, and those should get sorted out soon. But just because we signed Martin Perez and said that we're done doesn't mean that, you know, there's a bow on it. There still could be a reliever that signed or a big name that we sign that we're just waiting on. So that's a reason to wait about, you know, worrying so much.
So last week I had Brandon Brooks on here, and it was literally, we did this podcast like an hour after the Twins signed Martin Perez.
Mm-hmm.
So we did talk about that for a few minutes and like why they did it and what that means for the Twins. And I think Brandon covered that pretty well. Just the idea that maybe they see something in him that fills a need.
Yeah, I mean, So in 2016, Martin Perez, he started 33 games for the Rangers. He pitched 198 innings and two thirds. He had a 4.39 ERA. That is not a front of the rotation starter, but if he's your number five starter, that's pretty good. Same thing in 2017, 32 games started, 185 innings, 4.82 ERA, which is a bit higher. His field independent pitching, his FIP was 4.65. Again, it's not going to light the world on fire, but if you look at the Twins teams that were really good back in, you know, the mid-2000s, I mean, we got to the playoffs with Kyle Loesch. I think he pitched 200 innings, and he had like a 5.3 ERA at the back of the rotation. So you need someone like that, you know, who can just throw innings at the back of the rotation, save the bullpen a little bit. So, yeah, this isn't, you know, the game-changing, season-defining signing. But there's two options, or three options, really. He's either going to be a decent starter, he's going to return to form and be a decent starter. I mean, last year, I mean, before the start of the season, he got, like, run over by his bull. So if he pitched a little badly, you know, compared to his career norms, he got run over by a bull. So, I'll give him a pass on 2018.
Oh, yeah. Then he killed it.
Killed it and ate it, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the kind of grit you want on a team, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And he's all, I mean, he's all, the other thing, he's a lefty who throws like 93. He averages 93 on his fastball. He has a decent changeup. His breaking stuff's okay. I think his curveball is something that he needs to use more often. So he's either going to be a decent starter, return to form. He's going to move to the bullpen, which he did at the end of 2018. And he was throwing gas. He was throwing 96, 97 from the left side. Really, really good sinker. Last year was the first year he's ever struggled with home runs, and he plays in Texas, and that stadium's a bandbox. So if he comes in as a high velocity lefty to pair with Taylor Rogers in the bullpen, that's great. The other option is that he's miserable. And we only spent $3.5 million on him, and that's fine. Then we give his spot to a younger guy. Yeah. So not a huge deal either way. There's two decent outcomes and one bad one. So it's a, you know, relatively good deal, especially since we have a team option for the next year for, I think, pretty inexpensive too.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing too, the same thing happened last year when we signed Anibal Sanchez. He didn't even make the team. He probably should have. I mean, he was pretty good last year for the Braves, but we got all in a hubbub because we signed Anibal Sanchez instead of, you know, player X, Y, or Z. He didn't make the team. He was there for competition in spring training. Now, Perez has a bit more firm deal. He's going to be on the team in some capacity unless he's miserable. But he could still be in the bullpen. You never know. But, yeah, there's still something coming. So that's, you know, one reason not to worry too much right now.
It would be really ironic if he actually did go to the bullpen since he got run over by a bull.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. I wonder how many of his teammates have ribbed him for that when he got moved to the bullpen last year. But
I'm sure that's a running joke somewhere in Texas.
You could say that he's intimately familiar with bullpens, even though he was a starting pitcher.
So. Oh, that was so bad.
So the next big point for this whole payroll thing. And if you aren't aware, we're sitting around $100,000 or $100 million right now for the payroll.
$100,000 would be way.
Well, that's something that's actually kind of important, how low that is. So the way baseball payrolls work, basically most teams try to spend between 48 and 50% of their total revenue. Last year, the Twins were at about $260 million, so it made sense for them to spend about $130 million. This year, the expectations are higher than that, but for whatever reason, we only have $100 million on the payroll right now, so we're lower than that threshold, and the Twins have historically been a little bit lower than that threshold. But the big reason why they might be leaving some room on the table is because we have a lot of guys who have no contract-based future. There is one site, I forgot who it was, so forgive me for that, but the contract requirements that we have for 2020 is $300,000. It is the buyout for Nelson Cruz. That is the only guaranteed money that we have going into 2020.
I can look it up really quick if you would.
Yeah. What that means is that all of our young guys are still in arbitration, and our veterans are going to be unrestricted free agents.
You're a team sign and everything?
Yep.
Okay. So then I can get back. You can eat a little lunch and we'll go.
Okay. See ya.
All right. Bye, Godfrey.
Gotcha.
So we have two veteran pitchers in Kyle Gibson and Jake Odorizzi.
Guthrie, let's go for a walk.
Who are going to be free agents at the end of this year. Michael Pineda, who we signed last year, injured, is going to be a free agent after this year. And then the rest of the people on the team our kids outside of Nelson Cruz. Other than that, we don't have anything. Jonathan Scope is going to be a free agent. CJ Krohn, we have a year left of team control, but he's going to have arbitration.
I apologize. My dad came in the room with my dog for a minute. So
That's okay.
Yeah. And depends on how you define kids.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's another thing to consider, too. I mean, our core is getting a bit old for being a young core. I mean, Eddie Rosario is going to play this year at 27. Kepler is going to be 26. Buxton, Snow, I think Polanco are all going to be in the 25 or so range. 25, 26. But this is the point where you start handing out extensions to them. So, you know... And Rosario specifically probably is the one most deserving of a long-term extension, unless they don't like him. Max Kepler could be had on a pretty team-friendly deal because he hasn't been hitting very well. And Buxton, I mean, I've always been in favor, especially after the debacle in September, of throwing Byron Buxton a huge contract, you know, $12, $13 million a year for the next 6 years. He'll be happy with that, considering everything that's happened. And that's where that money goes. Same thing with an extension probably for Jake Odorizzi as opposed to Kyle Gibson. Kyle Gibson is going to pitch at 31 this year. Odorizzi is going to be 29. So really... looking into our rotation for 2020, we have Jose Berríos. And that's it. So you probably need to sign one of Gibson or Odorizzi. And then you hope that, you know, Martin Perez works out so that you can use his team option or something like that. But we need to extend some of these people at some point and sign some of our free agents. So that's another thing too. And another sort of qualifier in that same realm that Brandon talks about in his piece on zone coverage is waiting for next year. There's going to be a huge pitching crop next year, assuming that there aren't a million extensions. Garrett Cole, Verlander, Bumgarner. And then also there's going to be like a Nolan Arenado. And that's a big thing too for the Twins. With the way that the market's been playing out, would you rather sign Manny Machado for 7 years for 10 years at, you know, $300 million. Or would you wait a year and sign Nolan Arenado for 3 years and $60 million?
And we talked about this last week, actually. Mm-hmm. If the White Sox do get Manny Machado, how much would that change the division? And we kind of came to the conclusion that it would make the White Sox better, but... they're probably still not going to be that much better than they were.
Not yet. Yeah, absolutely. Manny Machado gives them what? I mean, he's a 6 or 7 win above replacement level player. So that team gains an extra 5 or 6 wins, but they've been god awful. And their pitching prospects haven't popped up yet. I mean, they might, who knows, this might be the year that they do. But another thing to think too, I mean, the White Sox play the Indians, what, 18 times or 9 times or however many it is?
It's usually 19 per year.
So if the White Sox are 5 or 6 wins better, they're going to take 3 wins away, you know, assuming that, you know, averages play out, they're going to take 3 wins away from the Cleveland Indians, which means that we have 3 wins less that we need to win the division. So if the Indians are a 90-win team, until the White Sox sign Manny Machado, well, then they're an 87-win team because the division got better.
That's way more doable than 90.
Exactly. And, I mean, just future. I mean, Derek Falvey's job is to make this team good for a few decades. So if he thinks that he would rather sign someone like Nolan Arenado while the White Sox are burdened with a big contract for Manny Machado for 10 years, but we only signed Nolan Arenado for 3 years at a much cheaper cost, we might be better in the long run and the short run. So that's something to think about there. And that also has a big sort of implication for my second big point, number two, is that there's a very good chance that these players, big time players that we want to sign, don't want to come here. And that is something that we sort of have to deal with. Bryce Harper was born and raised in Las Vegas. He was instantly famous at 15 or 16 years old. He was on the Sports Illustrated cover. Got drafted number one overall by a big market team, Washington, D.C. And he's been amazing. And he's gotten a lot of press because he's been on the East Coast. Is he going to come to Minnesota and, you know, deal with our Twitter and all of our media and all of that? Same with Manny Machado. He's been, you know, he was Rookie of the Year candidate, or he won. I don't even remember. Big time player. Is he going to come here? Patrick Corbin, who signed with the Nationals this year, there was basically a 99% chance that he signed with an East Coast team because he's from the East Coast. So I assume that Thad Levine and Derek Falvey called his agent and said, is there any chance that Patrick Corbin signs somewhere other than the East Coast? The agent said no, so we didn't have that conversation. And that's something that happens all of the time with players. There are a lot of players who are from California or the West Coast who stick to the West Coast. There are a lot of players who prefer to be on the East Coast or in Florida or wherever. And Minnesota is sort of this barren ground where, we can get Irvin Santana or a Nelson Cruz every so often. But those big name players who are signing the mega contracts generally don't want to do it here, because not only are they dealing with a contract, but they're also dealing with marketing stuff, you know, shoe deals, stuff like that. And those make them a whole bunch more money than their baseball contracts does a lot of times. And they don't have those opportunities if they're playing in the Midwest. So that's just one of those things that happens. So what does that leave you with? Well, the big thing, and this is what Brandon started off with, and it's what I wanted to end with, is that you still have to take a look at the core of the team that you have and make sure that they're worthwhile. And while I was doing my research for this today, I actually sort of shifted the way that I viewed it. And Brandon does a really good job of sort of explaining that the big thing is that you want to make sure that Byron Buxton and Miguel Sano are real and that they are going to be sort of the pins of your roster. If you look at our position player core outside of Byron Buxton and outside of Miguel Sano, we have Eddie Rosario, who is a legitimately good outfielder. He's been sort of odd where he was miserable at the start of 2017, got hot, was hot at the beginning of 2018, and then was miserable in the second half. So he's basically had about a calendar year where he's been amazing. And on the bookends of that year, he's been dreadful. So yes, he's had two really good seasons in terms of OPS, OPS plus, all of that. But there's still no guarantee that that calendar year version of Eddie Rosario is what we're going to get in 2019.
Yeah.
Max Kepler. Go ahead.
Well, this is something that has been discussed on this show a couple times with TJ and with Brandon. They're not really that young anymore, but the young players have shown flashes of what we think they're going to be, but sometimes they don't pan out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, we're at a point where our core is at least worthwhile to have on a major league team, but there's different types of major league teams. You know, there's good teams and there's bad teams. There are a lot of players, you know, Melky Cabrera, who's basically extended their career by being the best player on a bad team. And that's fine, but we're not trying to do that. But, you know, so Eddie Rosario, he's been the best player, one of the best players on a mediocre team, but we need him to be a good player on a good team as opposed to one of the best players on a mediocre team. So we have to find a level either for Eddie Rosario to become the best player on a good team or for someone to overlap him, basically. Then we have, you know, guys like Max Kepler, who they're young. I mean, Max Kepler's going to be 26, but he has 3 years of major league experience. And he's been more or less the exact same player all 3 years. 2016, he had an OPS plus of 96. 2017, he had an OPS plus of 95. And in 2018, he had an OPS plus of 96. That's incredible consistency, which is good to have. And he's played phenomenal defense throughout that time. But if he's your number five or number six hitter, that might not be the best thing there is, especially since he's so streaky. So it's one of those things where, yeah, he's good to have on a good team, but he can't be one of your best hitters. Jorge Polanco, he's had three good second halves, if you include 2016. He's been dreadful before that. He was dreadful in, you know, the first half of 2017. He's never played more than 133 games. There's the makings of a really, you know, an above average shortstop or a really good second baseman. But he has to do it for, you know, a season or two full seasons to make it worthwhile. And then even past that, one thing that I was sort of looking into is how we've done with that core through sort of the waxes and the wanes. So in 2015, you know, we brought in Torii Hunter and we had that amazing little run in 2015 where we had a winning record. We didn't quite make the playoffs. That offense was the eighth best offense in terms of runs scored in the American League. And that year, our best hitter was Miguel Sano. He had a 149 OPS plus or a 916 OPS in 80 games. He hit 18 home runs. Struck out a whole bunch of times, but when he got in, he was dominating. Other than that, the rest of the team was pretty mediocre. Brian Dozier had an OPS plus of 104. Eduardo Escobar, OPS plus of 105. Plouffe was at 102. Eddie Rosario was at 102 as well. Eduardo Nunez played 72 games. He got 200 plate appearances, and his OPS plus was like 107. So we were literally average, offense with a really bad Kurt Suzuki, a below average Joe Mauer, slightly below average Joe Mauer, and then Miguel Sano was that linchpin that sort of brought it all together. And we had a good year, but not great. The next year, 2016, was, you know, the bad year, the paper bag over your head year. And what happened there, I mean, we remember Brian Dozier having 42 home runs. Robbie Grossman played really, really well in his 390 plate appearances. Miguel Sano did okay. He had a 108 OPS, but that was when Rosario sort of took a seat back. Buxton had a 90 OPS. I mean, that was the year that he had a really good September, but he was miserable before that. Kepler was doing his Kepler thing where he was being pretty average. Jorge Polanco came up. In that year, the second half of that year, took over for Danny Santana, of all people, at shortstop. And that offense was ninth. So you had a decent year by Sano. You had Kepler doing what he does, a bad year by Rosario, bad year by Buxton, decent year, half year by Polanco, and we were the ninth offense. Then we go into 2017. That was the year that we made the playoffs. And Sano was great. 126 OPS. That OPS plus was matched by Brian Dozier, 126 OPS plus. Joe Mauer was at 115 OPS plus, so he had a really good year. Jorge Polanco was dreadful first half. He turned it on in the second half. He had a 92 OPS plus at the end. Byron Buxton was at 93 because he had a really good second half. Max Kepler was okay, 95. And then Eduardo Escobar and Kenny Vargas were average hitters with an exactly 100 OPS. That year, we were the fourth best offense. So we were carrying basically four of our average hitters. You know, our everyday hitters were below average. We had Robbie Grossman, who was exactly average with 100 OPS plus, two bench players with an average OPS plus. And then we had Dozier and Sano, along with Rosario and Mauro leading the way. So we had basically four good hitters and a bunch of riffraff.
Yeah, I've kind of basically just blocked the 2016 season out of my memory, by the way, because that was not a good year.
Mm-hmm. But then we get to this year. So 2017, one of the best offenses in the American League, brought on by four players, basically, is what it was. And then we get to 2018. We have a bit of a you know, down year. Our best hitter was Eduardo Escobar in his time here, followed by Eddie Rosario and Jake Cave. Dozier was miserable. Mauer was below average. Sano obviously barely played. Same with Buxton. But when I was searching for this, and we ended up with the sixth best offense in the American League, despite not having Buxton or Sano, we only had Jorge Polanco for half the year. Ahiri Adrianza got 335 at-bats. And we were still the sixth best offense. And I was looking into sort of the way that we switched around our roster and the players that we lost. So we lost Joe Mauer, we lost Brian Dozier, we lost Eduardo Escobar, and we lost Robbie Grossman. So we lost four pieces, but we actually did pretty good job replacing them. In terms of first base, so we lost Joe Mauer, who was our leadoff hitter, big on base percentage. But we actually replaced him with C.J. Cron, who has, in that four-year range that I've been talking about, 2015 to 2018, C.J. Cron has, in fewer plate appearances, been a better hitter. In 2015, Joe Mauer had an OPS plus of 98. C.J. Cron had an OPS plus of 106. 2016, Mauer was at 104. Cron was at 116. In 2017, that was Mauer's bounce-back year. He was at 115. Cron was at 98, and in 2018, Mauer was at 99, and Cron was at 123 for OPS plus. So in that period, Cron's two best years were better than Mauer's two best years, and his two worst years were better than Mauer's two worst years. So the defense is probably a little bit worse, but on offense, we're probably a little bit better off, especially since Mauer had another concussion in 2018. So it's going to be sort of sacrilegious to say that, but even though Cron was a waiver wire pickup, unless he is, you know, he hits uncharacteristically bad, I mean, 4 years is a pretty good timetable of figuring out what a player is going to be. And Cron has been at least average each one of those years. So I would say we'd actually slightly improved offensively at first base. The next big position is second base. Dozier has been, you know, really good for so many years. He was at 114 OPS in 2015, 134 in 2016. That's when he hit those 42 home runs. 2017, he was at 126. And with the Twins in 2018, he was at 88 OPS. Yeah. So he was really good. And then he trailed off. And now he might be good again. I don't know. Now that he's had that knee injury. Healed up a bit. Jonathan Scope comes in and replaces him. His OPS plus in 2017 was just 2 points below Dozier. So he hasn't had that 2016 season, that 134 OPS season, but he's been at, you know, 124, 111. Scope has two of those 4 years. He was at 98 OPS plus in 2016. And then last year, obviously, was kind of dreadful. He was at 85. So if he gets back somewhere in his average, somewhere between, you know, 100 and 115 OPS plus, he more or less has replaced Dozier. Maybe a slightly better defense too than Dozier with the knee issue. But that loss, I mean, Scope is not as good as Dozier was, unless he has a really big bounce back here. But that loss is sort of buffeted by the fact that we signed Nelson Cruz. These are the OPS pluses that Nelson Cruz has posted in the last 4 years. 159, 147, 149, 135. His worst OPS plus in the last 4 years is better than any Twins player in that time span. So our stable of players around our young core are better than they ever have been. Oh, sorry. So in 2015, Miguel Sano's OPS plus in 80 games was 149. So he basically matched Nelson Cruz 1 year. But now we have Nelson Cruz on top of that. So the stable of older players around our core are better than they were. And even though we didn't have Miguel Sano and Byron Buxton, we were still the sixth best offense last year. So if Sano and Buxton return to any of the form that they had in 2016 or 2017, this offense is going to be better than it was in 2017, in my opinion. You know, obviously, there's a whole list of things that can go wrong, but the stable of, you know, other players outside of the core is better than we've had.
Yeah, and I've discussed this quite a bit. I'm actually weirdly optimistic about this season, and I feel like being a Minnesota sports fan, I shouldn't be a Minnesota sports fan in most sports. I shouldn't be super optimistic because I know what happens. I've had experience with being optimistic and having failed, but. It's just, I think, like, the over-under for wins, the Vegas line is 84.5.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you saw that.
Yep.
That's good. That would be good enough for the second wild card when they'd have to play the Yankees again. Which we know what happened in 2017. But I think this might be a good year.
Yeah, I mean, the offense is there, and we've had a pretty good offense the last 4 years. The worst we've been is ninth in the American League, which is slightly below average. And we're better than we were realistically last year when we were sixth. And we were probably better than we were, you know, if Sano and Buxton have decent years. I'm not expecting them to become MVP candidates, but if they have decent years, you know, if they have Miguel Sano's average year and if they have Byron Buxton's average year, along with a full year of Polanco, really for the first time, and Nelson Cruz and Scope being decent, and C.J. Cron being the person who C.J. Cron has been the last few years, this is a better offense than we had last year. The caveat that anyone's going to point out is pitching. And that is really when people say that we need to get a view of the core, I agree with them that we need to see how good Sano and Buxton are. But what I really think that we need to do in terms of seeing what our core is with pitching. So the same four-year period where we've been in ERA. In 2015, 83 wins, we were the 10th best ERA or 10th, you know, 5th worst or whatever, you know, the math is. 10th best ERA in the American League. 2016, dead last, 15th. 2017 and 2018, we were 9th. So obviously our offense has been fine. You know, we had the 9th best pitching in 2017 and 2018, our offense got a bit worse. So that sort of explains that 7-win differential. Maybe, I don't know, variance plays into there. But what we really need to improve is pitching. And that's what a lot of people are complaining about, is that we signed, you know, Blake Parker and Martin Perez, as opposed to going out and getting Cody Allen or Dallas Kuechl or someone like that. And what I mean with all of this about trying to see what the core of our pitchers are is that we have about 6 or 7 pitchers young pitchers between the ages of 23, 22, 23, 25, or 26 who we need to find what they are. Steven Gonsalves, Cole Stewart, Fernando Romero, Adalberto Mejia, Zach Littell, Lewis Thorpe. These guys have been in the system in some capacity for 5 or 6 years now, maybe more than that. And 2018 was the first time that they've ever made a legitimate mark. They've been a bit slow coming up in the minors, and you expect that a little bit, but you hope that one of them comes up at 23. And that didn't really happen. I mean, Littell was 22 last year, and he got a little bit of run. But for the most part, our pitching depth in the minors hasn't done anything. And that's bad for two reasons. First, because it doesn't help the big league club directly. That's pretty obvious. The second is because they are not good enough prospects on their own right to help us in a trade situation. Yeah. Maybe other than from Fernando Romero, he has the stuff where, yeah, someone would probably take him in a trade and we'd get good value for it. But if they're not making an impact on the major league team, they're not making an impact through trade, then they're kind of worthless. And the only reason why, the only way that you figure that out is by giving them time in the major leagues. So yeah, someone, you know, most people would love to sign Dallas Kuchel. That would move Michael Pineda to our fifth starting pitcher, which is good because he's coming off an injury. But how are you going to get innings to these 5 or 6 pitchers who need innings? You know, we've invested a lot of time and money into these guys, these young kids, and we need to see what they can do, especially going back to a point I made earlier, is that Jose Berríos is the only starting pitcher who's guaranteed to be on this team next year. We might lose, you know, we might not sign Kyle Gibson. We might not sign Jake Odorizzi. Michael Pineda might be a bust because of his injury. So if the 2021-2022 season is going to be really where our next core comes up, Royce Lewis, Alex Kirilloff, Bruce Gratterol, if that's when these people are going to be coming up and making a real push, combined with the core that we already have, they'll be a bit older, but they'll still be good major league players. We need starting pitching. And you can't go out and sign 4 starting pitchers every year. We need at least one of them to become a major league starter, whether that be the fifth starter who just gets sort of shellacked every fifth day, or a legitimate number 2 or number 3 pitcher, and bullpen too. That's another thing where people are always talking about, oh, spending on the bullpen and everything like that. You have to remember that Terry Ryan spent an exorbitant amount of draft picks on quick to the big leagues college pitchers. Literally 0 of them have turned out. Trevor Hildenberger did work, but he was like a, you know, 9th or 10th round pick, or even later than that, I think. He was not one of those guys where, you know, Nick Birdie, we spent a 2nd round pick on. Michael Cedaroth, Jake Reed, Luke Bard. We drafted those guys in the first 10 rounds, and literally none of them have been worthwhile major league players. If any one of those had turned out, our bullpen would be in a much better spot right now. I mean, could you imagine if Nick Birdie was even half of what he was expected? He was expected to be a big-time closer, throwing 103 miles an hour every other day. If he had been half of that, if he had been a good middle reliever, you know, half of our troubles in the bullpen would have been fine the last few years. We would have had depth in the bullpen. So it's one of the same things where we have to see what these guys can do. And we have to see if they can be part of the core. We have to see if Steven Gonsalves can be a number 4 starter, a number 3 starter. We have to see if Zach Littell can be a number 5 starter, a number 4 starter. Fernando Romero, maybe he's a bullpen piece. He had some really good starts last year, but if you look at his peripherals, he's probably going to be a reliever. He can't strike out people as much as he wants at the major league level yet. At least he's young. But we have to see who's going to be here in 2022, because Kyle Gibson isn't going to be here in 2022. Neither is Michael Pineda. So we have to find some guys who are. Otherwise, we are going to be, you know, up the creek without a paddle, because we're going to have to be spending so much money and overpaying for starters. So we have to give these guys some run. And yeah, Martin Perez complicates that a little bit because he's viewed as a starter. I think that's some wash on there that they're putting on there. They want Martin Perez to come in as competition for the young guys so that they work hard and they earn the spot and they move Martin Perez to the bullpen. I think that's probably what they want to happen. But they need these guys to get in there. They need them, you know, to get innings and prove that they can be a major league pitcher so that they can go through, you know, the sophomore slump before Royce Lewis and Alex Kirilloff come up.
Yeah, and typically these episodes are around this length. So unless you have something that else that you want to move on to, I'm thinking I'm going to end it here.
Sure. One thing that I did want to point out is that MLB.com has been releasing a lot of their rankings in the last few days for their preseason prospects. Big news for Royce Lewis is that he's the second best shortstop according to MLB.com. And they actually improved his fielding grades, which is a big deal. He worked really hard in Fort Myers on his fielding, and they took note. So people who think that he's just an outfielder, maybe he can't stick at shortstop. Alex Kirilloff is the fourth best outfielder. And by the time that this podcast will have been released, they'll release their top 100. So we'll probably see three Twins on there. I would assume that we'll see Lewis, Kirilloff, and Gratterall. So that's a good thing to keep on, you know, since we're talking about that 2020 core, we'll see what the industry says about them by the time that this podcast is out.
Yeah. So thanks for joining me.
Yeah, absolutely. I ranted a bit, but it's been on my mind.
Yeah, I just let you talk because I didn't want to interrupt much. I did cut you off a couple times because I had things to say, but
oh, no worries.
Other than that, I think you had some really good insights. Thanks for sharing them.
Sure.
And maybe down the road you can come on again.
Certainly.
So absolutely, that was episode 4 of Minium Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. And I will be hopefully coming out with a new episode next weekend. Bye, everyone.